Hey, real quick before we get started, head over to Facebook and join the PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group if you haven't done so yet. We have monthly live trainings going on there. There's an opportunity for you to join in the conversation instead of just listening to what I have to say on this podcast, as well as the people that I bring on. And it's a really cool place to join about 6,000 other clinicians that are honestly trying to change the landscape of our profession through these cash and hybrid practices. One other thing that's really cool is we have a guide in there that's a quick start guide. When you join, you can go and check this out. There's about 7 videos that we've curated that are the most common questions we get and the best case studies that we've found to really help you start, grow, and scale your practice up to 7 figures. So if you haven't done so yet, head to Facebook, request to join the PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group. You have to be a clinician. We're going to check you out. We don't just let anybody in. But if you are, head there, go ahead, get signed up. We'd love to have the conversation with you in that group. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name's Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. What's up, guys? Dr. Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. And today we've got a little bit of a different podcast. We're not really talking about business today. We're talking about doing hard things. We're catching up with a long time friend of mine, a prior podcast co-host of the Doc and Jock podcast with me as well. Someone I just really enjoy talking to in general and learning from. And so we're going to catch up with my buddy, Joe Shimonic, today and learn about a really cool experience that he had this summer that I think we all can, you know, learn something from and maybe look at experiences in a little different lens. So, Joe, how's it going, man? First of all, like how's life, dude? It's been a minute. Probably what's the last time that you've been on this podcast? It was like probably a year ago when you wrote the book, right? Was that when it was?
Yeah. I was out there doing something with AP. There was a workout with mimosas that you guys were athlete was kicking off. So I came out there and was doing stuff with the clinic. So, but yeah, it's been a minute, dude. We got in your sauna. We were hanging out in the cold plunge and now we're here. So
listen, because my brother was in town. I remember that. My brother was
That's
in town.
That's right.
And so was his wife. And I'm pretty sure, and my brother listens to this podcast now. It's not something that he ever did before. So I actually have to be careful what I say. I can't just be talking shit about my brother left and right like I usually do. So Sam goes back and listens to I don't actually talk shit about you, Sam. But in this case, I think he had a real man crush on you, my friend. Like,
oh, me?
He was like, that guy Joe is a cool guy. I was like, yeah, he is cool. You know, and he brought you up a couple more times and I was like, you like Joe, don't you?
Well, listen, you know, that was a fun trip. I like being there. Atlanta's a cool city. That was the first time we really got to hang out. You got a lot going on. I mean, and we had a good time.
Atlanta, you know, it's interesting, man. I feel like I can live anywhere, right? Like I've lived a lot of places. Yeah. You've lived a lot of places. And it's really what it comes down to is more than anything, the people that are around you.
Yes.
But dude, there are definitely better places to live than others. Like I'm not going to discount that. Like I've been a lot of places, especially just not for a long period of time, but just when I was teaching for Mobility Watt, I was gone a lot and lots of different size towns, different areas. It's a cool way to see the US. And one thing that we'd always do is like, we would teach, we would try to go find a barbecue restaurant. We would just try regional barbecue everywhere, you know, that Saturday night or whatever, whenever we would teach. And then at the end, I would always be like, could I live here or would I want to live here or not? Right. And I always sort of like use that as my scale. And there's definitely places that I've been that I would want to live and places that I wouldn't, but Atlanta's an underrated city, man. It's just, you know, a lot of people here are not from here. There's a lot of diversity. It's easy to travel in and out of. You got all the elements of a big city, but man, we can be in the, you know, foothills of, you know, the start of the Appalachian Trail within 2 hours. And you can get to the beach within about 4.5 or 5. So, you know, I think it's like a pretty good spot. It's just a bit hot. It's super hot right now, but that goes away in the fall, and it's pretty nice.
Yeah, proximity to stuff is cool. That was when we were in that area living in Columbia. Columbia is super. I would not live in Columbia
right
for the amenities, but I would live in Colombia again because of the access to about everything else.
Yeah. I mean,
you know what I mean?
I've lived there. I lived there whenever I was in fourth and fifth grade. And I mean, obviously you're a different person in fourth and fifth grade than as like a 30, you know, 8 year old man. But I hear you. You know, I think it's interesting, dude. I think that there are some elements in smaller southern cities that are just like, it's odd to see some things, the way things still are. And you're like, is this really how things are in the US? And, you know, and in the Southeast and small cities, man, it still can be kind of backwards. And it's not a good thing to see. You know, I definitely see that in towns like that, or even where my folks live in Augusta, I see some of that. Columbus, Georgia was like that when we were stationed there, you know? So, and it's funny, cause you go to the Pacific Northwest and it's just very different kind of sort of like, stereotypes. Like I saw a bunch of sketchy, what looked like, you know, people with like mental health diseases, just like zombies walking down the street in one of the streets in Seattle late. Dude, this was late at night. It's one of the more sketchy things I've ever seen in my life. Like people were, one guy had tried to like, I'm assuming kill himself. He had cut his wrists. He had them bandaged up and there was still blood coming out. And we were walking back with our kids from dinner when we came out to see you. And I remember Ashley was like, there's some sketchy parts of Atlanta, but this is the most sketchy shit that I've seen with my kids. And we didn't mean to walk into it. We were like one street over from where the market was. It was crazy.
Yeah, that area is interesting. Yeah, Seattle, you know, that extends a lot. You trade one thing for another when you're going around places. That corridor between Portland and Seattle, it's like no holds bar on the streets. I mean,
apparently.
10 cities, clinics here and there, people self-medicating with whatever they're doing and managing their stuff. I mean, we used to take the kids to piano lessons, even down on Olympia, and there would be like, this guy thought he was probably a drummer. He was Nikki Six or something,
Dave Carey,
80s rock band. just on the corner, just drumming away. And kids are like, what's going on over there? I was like, he's having the time of his life. We just need to let him work it out. Like there's a little bit of a drug issue and whatnot. But, you know, like I said, that cities have their things, you know what I mean? So
I think what it comes down to, well, it's the community of people you're involved in, right? Like we are fortunate that a lot of Ashley's family has moved here since we've moved here, you know, and we have like my kids' cousins live in this area now. And, you know, we go back and visit something like Hawaii and it's cool because it's so beautiful. But family's so far away that it's tough. And I know even with you guys where you're at, right? Like you don't have a ton of family, where you guys are, everybody's on the East Coast. And even though, you know, the Pacific Northwest is just such a freaking pretty place, man. Like when we visited, and granted it was the summer, so I haven't seen like the whole year, but dude, it was just unbelievable. Just so pretty.
Let me ask you this. This was, you know, we're getting way into something. So when we were doing Doc and Jock, both of us were moving a lot, right? And it was like 3 years here, 18 months there.
Yeah.
And then since we're starting now, we've both been establishing a community. Living here in Washington for 5 years is a completely different experience than when I was in West Point for 18 months or even Columbia for 3 years. I don't think 3 years is enough to be establishing a community. You know what I mean? Like we actually have friends now, like people who know my last name. Like you're the first person I've gotten onto a Zoom call with who actually says my name right. You know, my last name, right? But you know what I mean? So
I don't know if I can spell it, but I can say it.
You can say it. But no, but you know what I mean? Like now we're here 5 years. We got friends we carpool with. So we don't have direct family, but we've created it. You know what I mean? And I think that takes 3 to 5 years? I mean, how long before you meet like a good Atlanta buddy?
I mean, you know, it's a good question, man, because, you know, I feel like I'm not good at curating relationships. You know, this is something that I've actually like worked really hard on because it's I never thought this was a problem. But like growing up, I mean, dude, it wasn't that we've been it's not that I just moved whenever I was in the military. Like I moved every roughly year and a half to 2 years. Sometimes if we stayed somewhere for 3 years, that was like such a long time for us. And that was my whole life, man. Like I've never, ever been somewhere more than, except for here, you know, more than 3 years. And even when I was in college, like I was bouncing around in different places that we lived. So, you know, I don't think I do a very good job of curation of relationships, development of relationships. But what I'm good at is the start. Like I can pretty much get along with anybody and find common ground with anybody. And like, but then I don't, it's like, I don't know what to do. It's like a cat that catches a mouse and like, doesn't know what to do with it. Right. It's like, well, now what? Okay. So, but like, I think that for us, that's been something that we have not done as good of a job with. And a lot of it comes down to the amount of time that we spent building our practice. So Ashley and I, we spent so many nights and evenings, weekends, you know, all our bandwidth was just trying to not have a business fail right early on. Yeah. It's just so much work. And then a lot of the people that we did have really long-standing relationships with worked for us. So it's a different type of relationship. You know, people that you know you would get along with really well, but their employees you cannot treat the same way. So it's like at an arm's length. It's kind of weird, right? And then I had a lot of patients that I turned into buddies of mine. And you know, and then that's also kind of an interesting dynamic, right? So, you know, I would say it probably took me about closer to 5 years to really, you know, build some friendships up with people that I can like actually have a conversation with. And that's the hard part too, because not everybody wants that, man. Everybody just wants to talk about, you know, what UGA football is up to and you know, whatever, like, you know, whatever transactional thing. And I'm like, no, dude, I want to talk about like, let's talk about your life. Let's talk about what's going on. How can we be better parents? You know, I want to talk about that stuff. And that actually, I think, scares a lot of people away.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. So we're in the meat of that 5-year move and we're really enjoying it. So,
yeah,
but you get to pick in the nooks and crannies of places. And it's been a cool ride up here.
Well, and the thing that we want to get into today, and this is, you know, for those of you listening to this, Joe and I could catch up and just talk about random stuff for as long as we want. Like it's something that we did for like literally years. And, for a long time. And, you know, and it's fun, man. And people actually listen to that, which is always, I always found interesting. But, you know, from a standpoint of today, you know, what I want to talk about was this crazy trip that you did this summer.
Which was cultivated through a good relationship, by the way. We'll get to that in a moment.
There you go, full circle. But no, yeah, I mean, I think when I think of people, like, so when I, you know, when I, if I bring you up to people, it's, you're kind of a hard person to describe because, you know, I tell them, you know, I'm like, well, I have this friend and, you know, he's a great strength coach. He's also a middle school PE teacher. He has 3 kids. He's written a kid's book. He was, you know, one of the top Olympic lifters, you know, for his age group in the whole country. He went to the CrossFit Games and he wrote a kid's book. And, he's into like all these other things, like, you know, bow hunting and he's got a good relationship with his kids and his wife. And like, so it's like, you're kind of a hard person to describe. You're sort of this Renaissance man of experiences and things that you're into. And this summer, what I thought was really interesting, you told me, you know, you're like, yo, man, I just got off. You text me all these pictures and you're like, I just got off this fishing boat. I spent 6 weeks on an Alaskan fishing boat in the middle of Bristol Bay. Yeah. I learned this was wild. And I was like, what? And I immediately called you because I wanted to learn about it. Like, so it doesn't actually surprise me that you did that, but what was interesting was what you told me, you know, when we were chatting about what you learned. And I was like, man, this is such an interesting perspective to take. And also a glimpse into other people's lives that I don't think a lot of people really get a chance to see, you know? So how about this? Why don't you start out by saying, kind of talking about how you even got to the point where you decided you wanted to be a deckhand on a salmon boat for 6 weeks, because it's not like, this isn't what you do for a living.
Yeah. I was a deckhand on a bow picker, by the way, and we can get into what all that means, but listen, Alaska was wild. Listen, and I appreciate the compliment and what you said about the diversity of experiences and stuff. It was super cool. But look, essentially, I just wanted to do something really hard. You know, I've gotten into the outdoor life, and I've been intrigued by Alaska for a long time. I've been wanting to get out there. But I had a buddy who's a mountain biker who's helped me renovate a kitchen, of all things. And I get to talking to him, and his dad has a salmon boat. So through talking with this guy, one thing leads to another, and I was a deckhand on the Red Mag. It's a Bristol Bay bow picker. It's a 32-foot by 14 vessel that's made to just slay sockeye salmon for 6 weeks out of the year, man. And it was just it came down to wanting to do something. At that time, along with talking with Ian about his dad's experience in Alaska and trying just to get that done. You know, I've read a couple books, Comfort Crisis for one, Outlive I just read, and another thing that kind of pushed this thing to a head with wanting to do this is my wife's mother had passed in March. So, you know, I have all these weird feelings about wanting to do hard things, get things going. Interesting relationships came up, and then the opportunity came up and I jumped on it. I had summers off and I went for it.
You know, I feel like, and I don't know if you've experienced this or maybe feel this way, I'd love to know, you know, your thoughts on this, but when I look back at impactful things that have happened to me and experiences or people that I've met, you know, it's, I feel like there's these moments that are, it's almost like they're by coincidence, they kind of come together, but it's up to you to say yes, to actually take the step and have the courage to do something. And I would guess that a lot of people, if they really look back in their life, there's maybe moments or things that they didn't say yes to or directions they decided not to go. And they probably didn't do that because of, you know, the logistics of it, the fear of it, the unknown or whatever it might be. But, you know, it's interesting, right? You're thinking to yourself, oh, I need to do something hard. All of a sudden your friend's dad has a salmon fishing boat but you could have easily been like, nah, I can't do that. Right. I got three kids. It's a summer. Like, it's just, I mean, that's a lot to ask, right? Like even from your spouse. So, you know, a lot of people probably have moments like that, but do you feel like you've had moments like that where it's like, this is odd, this is coming together, or maybe you're just more aware of it and you're perceptive of it. I don't know.
No, I think it's a good point because I had a ton of reasons to say no. For one, it was 6 weeks. I read the text message wrong. I thought it was 1 week. So we start talking. All of a sudden, I get to scrambling and talking to these guys. And they're like, no, we're talking 6 weeks, not five, or not 1 week. So there were a ton of reasons to say no, too. I had committed to coaching two softball teams and developed this kind of program. We had all this, you know, with three kids, you know, I feel like that's always the default. You look to what they're doing and find reasons to say no. But I can remember talking to Eliza and the kind of culmination of the conversations with Ian, the reading the books, her deal. I just looked at her at one point and I said, and it became the answer I gave to everybody. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? I just said, I have this feeling I shouldn't say no to it. And I just kind of ran with it. And over the course of the trip, the term I came up with for it was just, I just had to huck it. So when we were fishing on the boat, Captain, you know, I didn't have many jobs I was good at, but they knew I could throw a ball. So I got the big buoy. So before we put the net out every time, I was a dude who threw the buoy out, and coach would always say, huck it. So I had, you know, looking back on it, you know, I had a bit of what I was calling just a huck it moment now, where I just said, you know, and what are the other terms for this? You had like, heck yeah, right? Weren't like hell yeah or F yeah, you got to do this. Like just, it was a cool feeling. And I was just, I don't know. I drove through it. I kind of snowplowed my way to making it happen. Right. And I don't know if for any reason it was just like, this was something I can't say no to. And I just made the decision. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. And I think there's also, you know, it's funny, man. I grew up in the military, and I know the military spouse, there's a lot of challenges associated with that. You take a lot, I mean, it's a tough life, man. And in this context, it was my mom, right? And in yours, it's you, and Eliza's the one that's active duty. But the military does not care about you as much as they care about what job she's going to be in, what role, what's the next stepping stone to make rank. Like, and you know, look, she's a lieutenant colonel, man. They don't do that by accident. You got to be a really smart person. You got to have the right assignments, and that means you're typically moving even more. You know, you're uprooting yourself even more. So it's tough, right? And like, it's hard. You really rarely have anything you do for yourself as a military spouse, you know, and this seems like it's like the thing that this is like very specifically about you, right? It's an experience that you want to have. Yeah. It's like something, and I think in a lot of ways, it's like, well, damn, man, like you've probably been just like giving to everybody else for who knows how long. It's just something that you get a chance to do on your own. And it feels like it's right to do so, you know?
Well, that was definitely part of it too. I mean, you know, Eliza deployed early on in our marriage. You know, when we moved out to Washington, she was in Georgia for 4 months, you know, and again, we've moved so much and you're always reinventing yourself. And that was part of it. And, you know, you bring it up too. And it was probably the most selfish thing I've ever done, but it had to be done. Like it felt good to do. It was hard to do, but that is a good point. It kind of brings that up. Like, how selfish can you be? So I also figured out that I probably can't pull this card every, I probably summer? Don't know if I could, no. I don't think I could pull this every summer. I don't think I could pull this every day, but it also brings to the point, like when you have these relationships with folks and even like Eliza, like there does come a point where if you've built up enough like equity with people and you've made enough deposits in your relationship, every now and then you can kind of do it. So even on a smaller scale, a couple assistant coaches I was working with, like as soon as I brought it up to them and I'm like, look, man, I know I committed to all this softball stuff and you're the assistant, but what do you think about bumping up? Everybody I talked to was like, oh, you got to do that. We'll support you. So in a weird way, it was like, if you want to find out if you have good relationships and you talked about curating them, right? You should plan things with them and then break your plans and see what happens every now and then. Like just throw the complete curveball at people. And I learned really quickly, like who my good friends were out here. And I actually found out that I do have them. Like, cause as soon as I came back, the softball didn't miss a beat. They were kicking butt. People were interested in the trip, but the support our family got was pretty amazing. And do you think that's an interesting test to throw at people? Do you think, like, if you had to right now test your relationships, how do you think that that would work out? And do you think that that's a good way to see if you have good friends? I mean,
yeah, I agree. I think it's,
you know what I mean?
I think what it is it's a, I don't know if it's as much of a, maybe it is a sign of friendship, but maybe it's more of a sign of how much do people feel like you've given to them and in a lot of ways, like sacrifice for them along the way. Right. Cause I mean, I can imagine like, yeah, I feel like if somebody was like, all right, Danny, you're gone for the next 6 weeks, on a boat in the middle of Bristol Bay, like I could do it for sure. And people would have to pick up, you know, things that I do and I'm sure they would do it because I would do it for them as well. So I think that more than anything, in your role in particular, if you really look at like as a teacher, as a coach, like you give so much to all these other people, to their kids, they see it, man. Like, and it's a hard job. Like I coach, you know, our kids' teams and stuff, and it's not something I do all day like you do with the students that you have and stuff. It's hard, man. It's hard to really like care enough to want to put a good, you know, practice together, to try to teach kids the right things, to be consistent, to not be, you know, to not lose your temper on them because they might not want to do whatever it is you say they're doing. You know, depending on the age is easier, I guess, than some. But I feel like part of it for you probably was, you think about your community, how much you've given to your community, and for you to be like, I want to do something.
I abandon them. They're all giving me a hard time right now. We were at a, I'm not home for like a week, and there's softball tryouts and this and that and select teams. And you get, and again, it's a good sign every now and then, to just kind of cut bait and come back. Cause then when you come back, if you just pick it right back up, you know, that thing's pretty tight. Like when we talk, like it's nice. Yeah. You just get right back in and you keep going. So it was nice to be welcomed back in, but, I don't know. It's an interesting test, you know, and to learn it firsthand and to see and to have true friendship out here and have great support. But you do find out a little bit too. So you're doing some rec coaching, right?
Yeah.
And you're head coaching it.
Yeah, I did. I do basketball every year.
Yeah.
Baseball. I probably would have done baseball again this year. But we have too much travel going on with our business, in the fall. Yeah. That I couldn't commit. I'll help out in some ways, but yeah, as a head coach, I've done this now for, I don't know, different sports for the last probably 4 years. And the older the kids get, the more fun it is, to be honest. Yeah. Like the younger they are, it's just kind of hard. They can't really learn anything. Yeah. You know, dude. And it's like, I mean, I played baseball at a high level. And so like, I'm trying to teach these kids, you know, the nuances of taking a ground ball and trying to round it off and make sure they get their feet in the right place. And I realized pretty quickly, they don't know what the hell I'm talking about. They just need to make sure that they gator the ball and don't get hit in the face with a ground ball. Right. Like, it's like, you have to break it down to such simple levels and you realize, damn, like I still have so much to improve in terms of being able to communicate the right message to the right person. And, but it is hard, and it's a huge time commitment.
Well, and that was the thing with finding out from these guys, as soon as I got back to it, like, thank God you're back.
Yeah.
That's so hard. You know, people, Because it's one thing, you know, even it's one thing to be the assistant. It's one thing to be the number two on the business thing, but to like take on the mission and get it done and be the reason it's going, it's just a different, even from rec sports to running a business, I'd imagine, you know, to take that head seat's just a little bit different. So, you know, going on that trip was a cool opportunity to give some folks who have been like on the back burner to see how hard it is to actually be a member, like a prominent member of that little community, whether it's the softball team or it's like the big global business. It's hard to be like the focal point, you know what totally. I mean? So
no, it really is. You carry a lot of just pressure and time, yeah. And it is a burden to have everything run through you. And you know, it is a great stress test, I think, for what you're saying, like family, friends, and also your business. We talk to people a lot about this, like, man, if you had to leave for a month right now and no one could reach out to you, like, would they get things done? Right. So like, yeah. If you're listening to this as a business owner, you ask yourself like, okay, if you had to leave for a month and you had no, you know, no sort of cell phone service or way for people to connect with you, what would happen to what, if your business doesn't run, that means it's just like it's just you. There's no systems. There's no people that have been empowered to actually make decisions. And that takes time. That takes a lot of effort and consistency. And I think the other thing that's funny is like the appreciation for when you get back and it's like, oh my God, like, thank you for everything you do. Yeah. Or if like, right. if Ashley goes out of town and I'm like, oh my God, like all this stuff that she does, it's just like, I'm so thankful that she is, you know, a part of our family, because it's so much more apparent when she's not around, just like how damn efficient she is and how much we depend on her. And we just are so thankful for her after we experience the short-term loss of that, you know?
Well, that was funny too. Like there were a lot of benefits from doing that trip, and we'll get into some of the specifics here, but one last thing to come full circle on, and you bring up this whole being thankful thing and relationship business. The coolest part of my whole trip was probably the homecoming.
Yeah,
when I had pulled up and I had taken the red eye in from Alaska to even get home. And when I walked into the house, this is at like 6 a.m. here in Washington, there was a welcome banner. There was a big breakfast. I put the big slideshow on the screen and we were watching it. And I'm sitting here thinking, I was like, this is a 2-hour breakfast. And in my mind, I was like, this is awesome. We're having a great time. But like, the greatest morning of my life was that morning, right? And then I'm like, oh, why can't every morning be like this? You know what I mean? Yeah. Why do I have to take a 6-week trip, you know, and almost die 12 times and catch all this fish and do all this to have a great morning with my family? So that's another weird part about it, just to express that thankfulness and to people that are around you a little bit more. It's funny that had to happen after 6 weeks being gone, but that was even cool too. So I don't know. Absence makes the heart grow fonder, right? So if every now and then just implement it, I don't know if you need to go to Alaska to do that, but you know, every now and then just taking a trip and cutting bait and then coming back and sorting it out kind of tightens up relationships too.
Yeah. I feel like it's, you know, it's similar to when we moved to Hawaii. I remember the first, I don't even know how long, few weeks, few months, maybe even, I just couldn't get over how unbelievably beautiful it is there. Like,
yeah,
the colors don't look the same. Like, this is green. This is what green actually looks like, you know, or that's what the ocean should look like. This blue, like how could anything be so blue? It's amazing to me. And I remember I would just be so just like, in it and present and just like fascinated with everything around me. And then, you know, you're there, you live there for 3 years and it's just like, it's just background noise at a certain point. Right.
Yeah,
and
you're back to sleeping in
100%, man. And it's, and like, we went go back and visit, right. This summer, we are just like, so we soak everything in. We're like, we're only going to be here for 2 weeks, man. We're going to experience everything. We don't want to miss. We didn't miss a single sunset the whole time, you know? And I can't tell you how many sunsets I missed in 3 years that we were living in Hawaii once we just got like busy with life. Right. And I think that you're right. I don't know why that is, but we definitely just get normalized to whatever we're around. That could be an amazing partner, right? That could be,
that's right.
That could be just like a great kid that you have that you just, it's just, that's just the way they are. Right. And then maybe it takes you being around a real shitty kid to really realize, man, my kid's awesome. And I need to let him know more often because they're just like, so like great to raise. And it's like, it's the appreciation for that. I think you need the opposite to feel it, right? It's like, you don't know what hot is unless you know what cold is. So I don't know how you engineer that in without some of these experiences or some of the time away, you know?
Well, I think, again, well, now to get back into the Alaska trip, that's what was the cool thing about it. And the big concept was to just keep doing. Every now and then, I think you have to do something hard, right? And you brought it up beforehand, and I brought up the comfort crisis, and reading that book was a big paramount reason why I did this. That, what did you, the term they use in that book and the term we talked about before the show was that Misogi situation. Yeah. I had not known that that's what I was sorting myself out to do, but I don't know, when you do those Misogi type things, and the degree of which that you take part in them is up to you, whether it's, you know, putting a 5K on the calendar or going to Alaska, whatever your degree of challenge is, when you incorporate those hard things into your life somehow, they do make you appreciate things. Like, yep. I'll tell you right now, one in particular, the Bristol Bay. Do you ever heard of the Bristol Bay bucket system?
No.
Okay. This is how we use the restroom on the boat. Yeah. So our little 32-foot vessel did not have, running water or, you know, the toilet that we mostly use. So, you know, imagine 40 mile an hour winds, 8-foot seas, you're on a big run, and all of a sudden you got to take care of business. It's not as easy as just walking into your restroom, you know, climate controlled, you're not wet. You know, you don't have to get dressed. You don't have to crawl out of bed in a particular way. But look, you all of a sudden get a real appreciation for what a real bathroom is when you don't have access to one for 6 weeks. So, all of a sudden going to the bathroom is not a place. They tell you, hey, let us know when we're making a run if you're using the restroom, because we need to know if you don't come back. Because every now and then, guys, it happens. You're on the run. You're tired, you sit on the bucket, and all of a sudden the boat bumps in a funny way and you're over the side. Didn't happen on our boat, but this
so you're outside.
Yeah. No, listen, on the boat. Yeah.
It's just a actual bucket. I thought a cassette toilet.
No, it's a bucket on the bow of the boat.
I completely misunderstood. I thought they just called it that. So you got a bucket and you're sitting out in all this wind and rain.
Yes, most times. But here's the other thing. You even learn to appreciate things like that. We were making a funny, someone said something to me and I was like, yeah, but when I poop, eagles fly. And the interesting thing there is that happened to me once. I'm sitting there pouting away on the bucket. This sucks. It's wet. It's cold. I just really want to go back to sleep. It's 3 a.m. But all of a sudden I hear kick, 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 and I'm looking up and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's an eagle. Okay, there's something to appreciate there, you know, and there's even a sunset picture that I laugh at every time I see it, because unbeknownst to everyone looking at this red sun, and it's a beautiful picture, and there's a picture of a great boat, I was on the bucket doing that. So even in that moment, when you do really hard things, it's crazy how you figure out how to appreciate stuff, right? And that was a big takeaway for me as soon as I got home appreciating them. So The biggest challenge I've had since even coming back is keeping that up, because golly, we do that comfort crisis thing is a real deal. You take a lot of stuff for granted, whether it's air conditioning, a comfy couch, all this entertainment that we have access to, and you just fall into it so quickly. You know, all of a sudden you're not watching TV for 6 weeks and you're, you know, number two and in a bucket and taking advantage of everything. And then all of a sudden, you know, a week home, and you're right back to the normal part of it. You know what I mean? Just getting into the modern go about. But no, man, it was cool to have that, and it was cool to gain an appreciation for just the little things that you take for granted.
Well, I think one thing we can do is maybe we can kind of define a Misogi a little bit, because I think if you look up, I read the Comfort Crisis. Jared Moon has Killing Comfort, which is a really good book. You know, Jesse Itzler, who talks about Misogis, he talks about, you know, Living with a Seal, the David Goggins, you know, book that he wrote. He talks about some similar stuff to that, right? Even a guy, Kyle Korver, who has played basketball for the Hawks, and I believe he's actually on their management staff now. He talks about how he does a Misogi every year, I believe with like his brother or something. And if you look at like Misogi, in Japan, it's like, technically it's like to cleanse, or it's like to wash away with water. right? Yep. So I don't know how that gets translated into basically what we think of as something so hard that it makes the rest of the year seem easier, right? Everything else seems easier. But that's kind of the way that I look at it, right? And it can be as simple, I think, as anybody that maybe has had the experience where you have gone camping and you slept on the ground. And then, yeah. You know, the next night in your bed, you're just like, oh my God, this bed is amazing. And you take it completely for granted every other night of the year, right? So I do think people can relate to what you're talking about. I guess, you know, for you, just the process in general, like what did you learn about yourself during that 6 weeks of what I would consider like pretty uncomfortable time that you've now been able to take with you and hopefully keep with you, you know, now that you're home?
Well, one thing that actually is interesting is to confirm something. This is going to sound like a real guy thing to say, but I wanted to see how tough I was. Like, I've done stuff in an athletic scenario, whether it's CrossFit games or football or weightlifting or in a gym. I think I've done hard, tough things in a gym and in a kind of controlled sport setting. Yeah. But I wanted to take on like a different level of tough to see what I had where you couldn't quit. You know, like in sports, you can just say time out or pause, right? And there's always that safety net. But out there, you couldn't. There's dudes' livelihoods depending on what you're doing, right? And you come to see that quick. So I wanted to put myself in a deal where, you know, once you're on the boat, there's really no getting off. We were out to see the whole, you're going to complain. And, you know, it's actually a really big deal. And, being a kind of a team guy and a team sport guy, there's just no quit. So I wanted to see if I really put that to the test, if we could do it. I'm going to put myself into an environment where I don't know what I'm doing. So that was kind of cool. It was a confirmation to see if all this kind of athletic stuff and toughness that I've kind of cultivated through playing football and sports and coaching was a real thing, or if it was just something that worked in the context of sports. Cause this was a real challenge. So that was pretty cool. It was nice to confirm that there is some real resiliency there. It was nice to confirm that, that, you know, I could do something that I had to do and get it done. You know, that was probably the coolest part. I mean, because I have never been, that was like the longest test, probably still the hardest 5 weeks of my life. No doubt. Physically, mentally, I didn't have the relationships that I normally have. I was doing a job I didn't know how to do. The grind, no sleep schedule. I mean, it was the opposite of the current go about, you know, in suburbia. Complete opposite on every direction. So in that regard, it was nice to know that, middle-class white guy can go out there and still get after it. You know what I mean? And so it was nice to do, you know?
And, I think that it's funny. I have a friend and he'll always, you know, he has this like team of people that he's like, if there's a zombie apocalypse, I've got a group I'm reaching out to. He's got like people for all kinds of stuff. And I'm on his team because he's like, well, you have some leadership tendencies, but you know how to deal with musculoskeletal injuries, which could be incredibly important if I have to run away from a zombie. And some basic combat medical skills that I had to learn whenever I was, in the military as well. He's like, you're on the team. And then he has like people in these different things. Right. But I think to myself that it's obviously such a silly scenario, but man, if you had to like snap back into a feral, state, I don't think it's hard to say, right? Cause hopefully we don't necessarily have to do that, but I think that, people want to know what they can handle, like what they can do. And it's normal to want to experience that. Maybe not quite long of an experience you're talking about, but it's the reason why you see people that are so into Tough Mudders and Spartan races and Go Ruck competitions and, all these things that are just like a little bit more primal. So I do think there's a natural underlying tendency, not just for men, but for women too, that they want to see like, all right, what am I physically capable of? I feel like I lived in this temperature controlled bubble, but it's not the way we're designed, right? We're apex predators that are just like driving to and from work to sit on a computer to then drive back and then sit on the couch and watch TV. You know, it's not really how we're designed.
And I would say for folks interested in doing something, like, and this might be some cool, a cool thing to, even if you are planning out, like, let's say you're into this Misogi concept, or you want to do a rite of passage, right? Another phrase on this is a rite of passage. My uncle does these trips out here. They call them, he works for a group called Journeys, and they take kids out in the woods for like 3 weeks to do things. And it's a wilderness kind of survival stuff and rites of passage gear. But look, you also have to, you have to taper your way into it, right? I wouldn't, one of the things, this kind of wasn't a cold turkey thing for me. You know, one of the cooler things you mentioned that I've gotten into since living in Washington is the elk woods, right? So I've gone out there and done like a week backpacking thing, right? So even in that context, was kind of dosing that out to go a little bit longer. So, you know, if you are planning on it too, I don't know if you have to just jump into 6 weeks on that. I mean, you can go on a Facebook page right now if you wanted to. I think it's bristolbayfishingjobs.com or Facebook or whatever, Bristol Bay Fishing Group, and you can look for these things. And I would say if you're not used to kind of, if you're not camping, you probably don't want to get on one of these boats until you sort some of that out and see what you can manage, because if you haven't had to use the restroom with a shovel, all of a sudden the Bristol Bay bucket system's not so bad because you can relate to it, right? But all of a sudden, if it's porcelain thrown and now 6 weeks on the bucket, you're probably going to have a hard time with it. So, you know, I don't know, just kind of give people a tip on kind of creating their first, I'm going to get hard or Misogi experience. You know, you want to dose it, you know? So there are some context leading up to being able to do that trip, and, you know, start with backpacking, start with camping before you do something crazy like that, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too, is it doesn't have to necessarily be something quite so extreme, right? Like, it could literally be, you know, a super long walk that you do one day, you know, like right. It could be like, I remember whenever I was stationed at Schofield Barracks, I got, like there were all these battalions, and each battalion had a different, you know, designator. So it would be like 116 or 121 or 227. And it was basically, you know, this, the designator for that specific battalion within the brigade. And, but whatever the last number was, each of these battalions would always do a ruck march that would be equivalent to that number. Right. And so there were two battalions that for whatever reason thought that I was like part of their battalion, like organically. They didn't understand that I was for the whole brigade. So they basically adopted me as like an adopted, you know, medical officer that was organic to them. That means I had to do everything that they did. So I remember like when we did this 21-mile ruck march, and listen, if you were in some sort of, you know, infantry elite group or just whatever, you're a cab scout, you spend a lot of time with weight on your back walking around, that may not be a huge deal to them. But for me, a physical therapist that is like treating injuries most of the day, and then all of a sudden they're like, hey, Cap Mate, tomorrow we got 21-mile ruck march, and it's just, you know, commemorating whatever. And I'm like, what? You know, at like 21 miles. And dude, I just remember just how it was one of the more miserable things I've ever done. And just like everybody was beat up. And I always thought, this is so dumb that we're just only going this distance because it's the end of the, you know, the designator number that you have. But I just remember thinking just like how much easier all these other things were afterward, right? Just like it was a forced Misogi in a lot of ways. And that's literally walking with weight on your back for a lot longer than you want to walk, right? So, you know, you can do something as simple as that, right? Just do something that is outside your comfort zone, outside your norm. You know, maybe it is, you know, maybe you never, you know, sleep on the ground or something like that. Or, and you don't have to go head first in this. You can definitely, you know, take baby steps into things that make you uncomfortable. And for a lot of people, they find that in endurance sports, right? It's like, okay, I'm going to do my first triathlon or my first marathon or whatever it is, whatever you have, you know, the desire to want to do. I think it's just a matter of the thing that you're like, ooh, I don't know if I want to do that. Like once you feel that, that's usually what you need to try to do.
You should do it. Yeah. No, I agree. This was, and again, that was part of it too. I did have the heck yeah moment, but as we got closer, I was like, is this really going to happen? It was a weird anxiety. to it, right?
Let's talk about that, because I would love to know. You show up, right? All right, you show up in the middle of nowhere, Alaska, and you got a backpack, you know, and you're like, no experience. You never been on a boat like this at all, like as a deckhand. They know that, right? They're like, who's this PE, you know, teacher from Washington showing up? Yeah. What was that like? Like, you show up day one, and like, what was that first sort of encounter with the people you're going to be working with like?
Well, I'm glad you did that too, because it's a good question. And I think if I had done this when I was 17, like a lot of guys, or 25, or a college guy, would have been different. You're a lot more, you're selfish in the wrong ways then. Everything's about you, right? I'm doing, right? And I was lucky enough, because Ian told me this was a job. Because when I first brought this up to him, the guy who has done this before, he goes, no, no, no. If you're on the boat, everyone gets a share. It's a job. He goes, if you ever do this, you need to realize it's a job for these guys. This is not your midlife crisis. So going into it with that mindset was really important, because I had to check my ambitions, knowing that this was a real career for those guys. And I actually do think it was super helpful, because when things happened or things didn't go right, I was like, well, I get to go home. These guys still have to work. This is how they make their living. I might not need the money, but they do, right? So that was kind of the biggest thing for me that I think actually made me be successful, because I checked anything I wanted to do and realized this is Captain Brad, Captain Tanner's deal. Right. So whatever experience I want to have has to come secondary to the fact that these guys are paying their bills with this. Right. So I think that was really helpful, to not take my selfishness and wanting to have a good experience into their deal. But that was the scariest part. I figured I could handle it physically, but I was like, what if I don't like these guys? You know, what if this doesn't work out? But I don't know. You mentioned it at the beginning of the podcast, that you and I can talk and get along with most people at the beginning of a relationship. I think I'm decent at that. But I also really lucked out. I mean, Captain Brad, when he's not running, the salmon boat, he's a bush pilot, and he takes people on backcountry hunts. And he had his own plane, Tanner hunts and does some things. So we had a lot of common interests. So, it was weird, but being personable really helped. I mean, that was relationship piece was super tough. And I don't know. I think if you're going into a scenario like that, what helped me is just being open-minded. I was essentially curious about these guys, so that helped alleviate a bunch of that, asking them questions about what we're doing, not saying, hey, how can you help me do this job?
Yeah. I mean, and I think the other thing too is, I would assume, and I'd love to know what you took away from this, you're there because you feel like you want to try to do something hard, right?
Yeah.
And these people are there because they've got to pay their mortgage.
Yeah, their life.
And also, from what you were telling me, you don't know how much you're going to make until they start deciding what they're going to pay for the fish, right?
Yeah. Well, again, even like that, that was the craziest part too. It made me, there's a lot of things about our lives that are super duper comfortable. And I'm not in I've never really been comfortable in a bit line of work where you earn a commission-based economy, right? That's not, I like having the salary. I like things being consistent. But listen, when you want to talk about a cutthroat business, these boat owners take on all the risk. They buy the boat. They get the boat ready. They buy their nets. They buy the gear. They take on essentially all the responsibility. And they also don't know what they're going to make until they're halfway through it. We caught 110,000 pounds of fish before we even knew, and dropped off 110,000 pounds of fish to the tender and the processor before we even knew what we were getting paid per pound for those fish. So it is crazy, right? So again, luckily I had a guy who had given me some information about how hard the job actually is and what these guys are like before I had done it, because it really helped me check my own deal. And that was really nice to do. And it was nice to have that experience, but you have to do your homework. Doing my homework was really important on that, getting to know these guys. So, and the other cool part is I didn't know them cold turkey. Ian, the guy who had kind of middlemanned this relationship, he knew us both. So through Ian's relationship with both of us, me, Captain Brad, and Tanner, we had a kind of common interest and a common bond a little bit. So that was nice too, to have something that we could all talk about, or something that was kind of like a start of the relationship. Is, I don't know if that makes sense, but it was nice to have.
No. I mean, I think it seems like it'd be far less anxiety than just showing up cold turkey. And, you know, you're just like, you're some guy showing up to get on a boat with some guys you don't know. Right. Like that, that in its own right is nerve wracking. Just think about people when they have to go to new places and meet new people, how much that is, how stressful that can be. I feel like, especially now, considering, you know, people are definitely a lot more sort of remote. There's more, you know, work from home. There's less going out into the world, you know, and with that, I think people have even more anxiety associated with new people, new experiences, and the unknown. But, you know, I think about what you did, and I think about, you know, some of the things that most of us settle into, and I'm guilty of this as well, because it's just so easy to get, you know, in your routine and the things that are priorities that you have. And before you know it, you're just settled in this really comfortable life. But I was talking to somebody and I remember they said, life really is like, should be viewed as a great adventure that we get a chance to go on. Right. And like be able to have all these experiences that are really meaningful with people that are meaningful along the way. And it's sad to really think that a lot of people's view is that life is this challenging thing that just needs to be endured, and that, you know, you just have to deal with this time that we have, and not actually view it as something that is a positive, because their life just isn't what they want it to be, right? So I know you've got a couple kids and I have a couple kids, and that's one thing I try really hard for them to understand. It's just like, don't take it for granted. This is your chance to have an adventure. And at the end of your adventure, what's your story going to look like? Is it going to be worth reading, or is it literally going to be a boring story about somebody that never did anything and never challenged himself and never had to deal with adversity? Cause like, people don't want to read that, you know, live a life that creates a story that somebody would want to read and be like, man, that was cool.
Yeah. And I know you're coming through. We were talking about Outlive a bit, and, you know, Peter T makes that point. You know, that book is very mechanistic in terms of what's like, what's driving health and what's not, and how you can battle. But at the end, he gets into some of this stuff too, on a really cool level, where I think he calls it like, he makes the analogy about, you know, what people say about folks at their obituaries and stuff. And it's generally, it's not, people aren't going to be interested in your stat lines at that point. They're going to be interested in the cool stuff you've done and how hard it's going. And I make that point to my kids that even the middle school kids I teach, if the hardest part of your day, if the best part of your day is the fact that you get to come home and turn on Netflix, that's a problem to me. Right. And that's going to be a big problem that you're not going to be able to catch up from if you don't get ahead of it really soon. And I actually think the other part of that too is with rites of passages, Misogis, we put these things on little kids a lot through sports now.
Yeah.
But we forget to do them ourselves and enjoy it. So you have to kind of cut bait and do that thing constantly and all the time, and put something on the year and put something on the calendar that keeps getting you to take on a challenge that just gets you to appreciate things a bit. And I don't know if it needs to be a 6 weeks on a Bristol Bay gill netter, but it's got to be something, right?
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't have to be that extreme, I don't think, for everybody. Maybe it does if that's what you feel like you're called to do, or whatever it might be. But I think about this stuff too with our, with my son in particular. He's 11, and I think probably not next summer, but the summer after that. So his grandfather, Ashley's dad, he goes and he literally just got back from a 6 or 8 week trip where he just drove out. He's got a Jeep truck with an overland tent on it, and him and his dog just literally took off. And He just got back a couple days ago. And I mean, dude, like, it's, he went out there to hike the John Muir Trail, but it was so hot. His dog, like, literally couldn't take it. It was a shepherd mix. And it was getting so hot that he had to basically, like, go back and find a cooler place to be. Like, it wasn't quite as hot. So he's just up and down all over the place. Like, no itinerary, just ends up going, you know, wherever. Slept in a hotel zero nights the whole time he was there, right? Like, he basically just, like, living in his overland tent on public land with his dog. And, you know, and he does stuff like that basically every year, right? So this, like, sort of just off the grid trip. And honestly, he's always a more enjoyable person to be around when he does that and he gets back.
Yeah, that's right.
He just, you know, he just kind of, but with Jack, you know, when I think we'll end up doing this when he's 13, you know, there, we want to go out for a few days with him and hike through, a couple sections of places that he's been a lot and very familiar with and have him carry, you know, a certain amount of load and just like experience having to be uncomfortable in an unknown environment with the people that, you know, are male figures in his life. And I think that is something that's not like something that was intentional in my life, but I do think about it with our kids and it's something that it's like you talk about this sort of rite of passage. It could be something as simple as that. I think being intentional about, you know, these experiences that you want to have or you want to have with your family, and being able to, misery loves company, right? Like, and when you do that, you become closer together. I noticed that in the military, man, just like misery loves company is a real freaking thing. You notice that in football camp, you notice that in like all these things that you've had to do that are hard, and you develop these bonds of people that are closer. So I think it is very much worth looking at doing that with people that you really want to have the closest relationships with.
Yeah. And two, the cool part is even with new relationships, they're, I think, solidified through doing some of that hard stuff. Like, yeah, you know, gone through that with Brad and Captain Brad and deckmate Tanner, like, they're good friends now. Like, right when I got back, it was funny. We're on the trip, and every now and then, you know, there's different systems. There are some creature comforts on the boat that they had. Like, I didn't have cell service or internet the whole time. Didn't watch a single thing of TV. Just was reading books and drawing, and I picked up some old talents again. But, you know, there were some with good sight lines. There are little deals, whether it's the Garmin InReach or they had a Zoleo on the boat where we could link that up to a satellite and we could send some text messages. So we all have our own little family dramas where we can still communicate a little bit with family, not talk to them, but we were sending text messages. Come out that Tanner had a bear problem at his place in Homer, Alaska. There was a bear getting into his chicken coop and his wife was home alone dealing with that. But okay, the cool part is right when we got back, he sending me text messages of how he managed the bear issue. And, you know, we're checking in with these guys and doing that. So even with like new folks, it's amazing how when you actually do stuff with them, not just, you know, share photos and do the regular go about, when you have these interesting experiences with folks, it does also kind of hyperdrive your relationship building too.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
I agree. No, I, it's cool, man. And I think this is what's interesting is, you know, for people that listen to this podcast and primarily, right, it's like clinical business owners of some degree, right? And I think if you look at your business, it's what I find so appealing about business is you might not be going out on a boat, you know, and pooping in a bucket, but dude, you get your ass whooped all the time.
Yeah.
Both, like, you get turned down all the time. You have to have difficult conversations with people. You know, you have to deal with staff members that might leave and they become competition, you know, and you have to improve your deficiencies. You have to get better with, you know, emotional control, and you have to learn skills, and you have to do that over a long, long period of time just to have success in this thing that, a lot of people don't want to do because there's no guarantee. It can be very sketchy. You don't know what's going to happen. But it's like this long, you know, it's like this crucible of, experiences that you get to go through. And there's some of the greatest sort of highs that I've ever had or felt have come with things we've been able to accomplish you know, in our business, or even, it's not even us most of the times. It's like us having like all of our staff members be able to be financially secure enough to buy homes was like such a big deal to me. With Athlete's Potential. And like, I see these people and I see what they're doing. I see what their life looks like. And it's like all the hard work that we put in to get to a point where we can even have a business that supports these folks. Like, it's worth it to see those things. Right. But it is a endurance event. I mean, it is an ultra endurance event. And dude, and sometimes some days, and not just days, but it could be weeks where you're like, this sucks. Why in the hell am I doing this? Like, everything's going wrong. You know, I'm just getting kicked while I'm down. I don't know if this is going to work out. You're just like, you have these layers of stress associated with it. And the worst part is you can't share it with anybody in your business, because then they think the business is going out of business and they're going to go somewhere else. Right. So you have to suffer in silence. And if you have these wins, you really don't have anybody to celebrate it with either. So it can be very isolating. And I think that, you know, anybody listening to this can, in a lot of ways, relate with what they're going through with their business, with this sort of, you know, intense experience. But from that comes so many positive things. And I think that, even looking at engineering something else inside or outside of that, something physical, I think is really, really helpful. I don't know if would you consider like having a Masogi that has nothing physical to do with it? Like, would you like, I don't know, giving yourself like a couple weeks to learn a language and then forcing yourself to like go somewhere and, you know, try to communicate in another country? Like what is it? Are there, you know, boundaries around what that might be?
Well, listen, I would say too, like, one of the harder parts of this challenge was probably how to manage time and stuff. So yeah, like you bring up like this idea of Masogi. So it's easy to look at this trip I went on and be like, it's hard, right? On the boat, I'm pulling the physical labor part of it was gross, and the challenge and being on there. But actually the hardest part was managing the fact that we didn't have the digital distraction. So I actually probably would say, one of the better Masogis that anyone could probably do is to just do nothing. Like
digitally, cut it all off.
Sit in the closet for 20 minutes. And I experienced a little bit of this even with hunting. One of the favorite things I like to do is when I go out hunting or fishing, is to go out there without the phone, without talking to anybody, without distraction. And can you manage that being alone portion of it? Because that was the other thing. The boat was, although it's a 32 by 14 boat, you're pretty lonely most of the time. You know, when I could distract myself by playing catch with my son, or I could distract myself by turning on Netflix, or I could go in the garage and get, you know, a workout in, or take the mountain bike out and do that, or go on a hike, or hang out with any number of people and go any number of places. When you had a spare moment on the boat, you were just on the boat doing nothing. So how do you even manage that? So those are actually some of the harder times when it was busy and we were grinding and we're getting after it and we were doing work. In fact, I wrote this. So another part about this was wild. My bunk there, you guys know what bunk beds are, right? I slept in a bunk bed, but I didn't get a bed. My bunk was under the bunk. So there were three bunks. Mine was on the floor. I had 18 inches. Space to sleep under. It was pretty much a coffin, had to crawl into it. So when I would have time alone, I crawled into my coffin. And I remember writing on top of where I slept. I started marking down days every day. Every day wasn't easy. I was kind of keeping a ticker. But I ended up writing this quote. I was like, I first kept thinking work will set you free, but I was like, I can't quote that. That's pretty awesome. It's a pretty terrible quote. I don't want to pull that, you know. But then I was like, the only relief is in the work. And that was the only time it was ever easy on that boat, was when we were grinding. So just bringing it up, like, can you manage boredom? If you're really looking to challenge yourself in this modern day, yeah, I actually think the hardest part of that whole deal was the mental toll of just doing nothing, the mental toll of being bored. Like if Coach Brad, I kept calling him Coach, by the way, if Captain Brad's going to give me 4 hours off because we don't have to do anything, I don't get to go off the boat and go play video games or go to the bar or get to hang out. I'm still just on the boat. So
just pooping in a bucket still.
You're still there. So yeah,
that's all you got.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I get time off, but I'm still pooping in the bucket, but my time off was in the bunk. You're just in 18 inch coffin doing nothing. Right. So You know, that was probably the hardest part, managing that. And if you haven't ever done that before, you probably need to start. And I guess this brings up, you've probably talked about meditation on this. You have to have some sort of a practice like that. And that was put to the test more than any physical thing that I had to manage on that boat, or any even relationship piece, you know, dealing with my bit bored. I've never been that bored for that long before, or had to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like we're all so inundated with tasks and information and these like super dense schedules. I see it with my kids too, man. And sometimes I'm like, I don't know if this is the right thing to do with them. You know, it's like they've got all these activities. They've got school all day, then homework, then they've got, you know, some physical sport, or it's like trying to learn an instrument or whatever. But just like downtime is not that common, you know, like it's every minute is sort of packed. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So I don't know if, like, it's hard for me to think back when I was a kid, right? I feel like especially specialization, travel teams, all these things were not as prevalent, especially at a young age. Like, why do 8-year-olds need to be on a travel team? Like, I don't understand what's the point of that, to specialize so early I think the only reason is because their friends are doing it. So there's a social element to it that they don't want to miss out on. But you know, we know it's not great for you to have your kid focus on one sport at 8 years old. You don't even know what they're going to look like, physically, you know?
It's also easy to get caught up in, right? Because you're not for the right things. I mean, Charlie does gymnastics. We just got done a great softball season. And then all these girls want to do the next step. And rather than go play soccer, all these girls are at the next travel softball thing. So we're actually having this debate right now. And kind of to bring the other thing to it, I wonder too, the things that I really like to do right now are, and what I appreciate about them, whether it's going to the elk woods or when it was in Alaska or any kind of task, whether it's getting girls ready for the softball tournament, when you can kind of, and this is a cool business tie-in, it's the singularity of purpose is really nice. And I've come to really appreciate that. As hard as Alaska was for 6 weeks, and as complicated as those systems were, whether it's how the state troopers were managing it, how we had to talk with biologists, what we do on the boat, dealing with meat tenders. At the end of the day, like, the singularity and purpose is that we're all doing this for the health of the river was really nice. We're all trying to get salmon in the boat. This is all we're trying to do. To wake up knowing that that's the job, I'm pooping in a bucket because we got to get salmon in the boat. I got to cook these guys just to get salmon in the boat. That's actually really nice and comforting. So to your question, is it right for the kids? Is this the right way? I don't know, but I don't know why I'm not applying it more to my kids as they're developing. And I'm still get caught up in that rat race, right? They got to do this. They got to do that. You got to keep up with it. I don't think it is, based on my own personal experiences and what I like. I like the fact that I had to do one thing for 6 weeks, and that was really comforting. You know, so.
Yeah, I think the challenge is the perception of being a high achiever, right? It's like, you don't want to be left behind. Yeah. And we have a very competitive society, which in a lot of ways I think is a positive thing, in terms of, you know, being able to achieve things that you want to achieve in your life. And you have to learn how to do things you don't really like. Like, I had this conversation with my son where it's like, do you understand what discipline is? You know, it's doing things that you don't want to do, 'cause you know, they're good for you. Like, you know, I would rather eat tasty cakes than broccoli, but one is not great for me and one is better. Right. So you can't just do the things you want to do all the time, because they might not be the best things for you long term. And understanding discipline and how that applies, and just trying to get better at skills. I feel like, my opinion is, I don't care what my kids want to be good at, but they need to at least try to aspire to be really good at something. And it can be in any domain that they choose. as long as they understand that it takes work and it takes a deliberate practice and effort to get to that point. Because if they can learn that, then they can apply it to pretty much anything that they want, and they won't be, you know, weak-minded people that give up easily and that are trying to be dependent on other folks. Like I think this is a huge problem. As just a citizen in general, I think you need to at least be able to chip in and take care of yourself, be able to be empathetic towards other people, but also, you know, be able to work on yourself and become a better person and lead by example. And you know, I'm just like, man, if everybody just focused on their kids just being good citizens, we'd have a hell of a lot less problems. But yeah. Instead, what it seems like we focus on is you know, what travel team can my kid get on as fast as they possibly can at the expense of all the other things that they should also be learning, because they don't have the time for it, you know? So I don't know, man. It's probably a conversation for a whole nother day, because I go pretty deep on that. But I think the downtime is something that they don't get a whole lot of. And when they do, I mean, my kids default to books, man. They read like crazy. But even, I don't know, sometimes that is like, can you sit there and not do anything, you know, or come up with some random game you just decided, you know, you made it up being creative? I don't know.
Well, and that's what was actually cool. With all that downtime, I actually got bored of reading books, right?
I bet.
So I started doing weird stuff. Like, I started drawing again. I started I wrote a poem, like weird stuff. Like, I started writing letters to my family and stuff. So like, that's the other part too. When you do slow down, and I'm glad that you brought up that deal. Like, I'm glad we're on this chat about it. What like hard part was with it not being physical, like you brought it up. There are a ton of opportunities to just, you know, challenge yourself to write something down every day, you know, 100 words. It could be really that. There's any number of ways to do it. And it's funny when you do that, what ends up coming out of you. I ended up drawing some like really good pictures. You know what I mean? And I remember I was like, oh, you know, when I was a kid, I used to really like to draw. And you remember all these old things, but it only would have happened. And it only did happen because I was forced into it. Like, again, these extended periods of boredom and not being able to do stuff. And it was as challenging as anything else. And I think the reward will be pretty cool. What would you do? When's the last time you were bored for and think about, and not bored in the context that you're bored right now. If you're bored, you're going to get in the sauna. You can get access to the computer. When is the last time you've really been bored and literally had no choice but to be bored?
I mean,
has it ever happened?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely have periods of time where I've been extremely bored when I was in the military. You know, when we would go out and we would do different field training exercises, and like my job. So, you know, I was bored a lot in those environments, because my job was not to go do these, you know, whatever training missions where you're going out and you're simulating an ambush and kicking it. Like, I would love to have done that, you know, love to. Dude, I'm there. So my primary job in that role was I'm like one of the triage officers. So me and the dentist are just waiting for people to have this simulated mass casualty where they would come in, and then we'd have to say, okay, this person goes here, this person goes here. We'd have to categorize them based on the types of injuries they had. And so you might be out there for 5 days and you get a mass casualty scenario that comes in once, maybe twice. You know, and then I'm just hoping somebody gets hurt so that I can like take a look at an injury. Cause you're supposed to, like, my job is like, I'm supposed to be at this, this hospital tent, you know, like in case this mass casualty happens. And so I remember being incredibly bored, especially the last one that we did. And it was like me and the dentist. And then honestly, dude, we would just like, I would just talk to him. Or we would be studying. I was studying for my board certification at the time. And I could only do that for so long. Before you're just like, I can't do this shit anymore. So, and you're sleeping out there too, man. So you're just like, you know, all day waiting. But then you need to be ready in case something happened. That's actually the most strange thing about it, is like, you can't just be passive. You have to be, you know, learning the information you have to learn, because you've treated this as it's going to be a real life scenario. So, you know, there's like this level of stress, but it's boring. So I would say like, that's the last time, but ever since we got out of the military, I can't tell you the last time that I was like legitimately bored, because I just feel like we've packed so much into the last 9-10 years that I haven't had a moment where I'm bored.
There's that was the thing. There's always something to do, but out there, there was nothing you could do.
Sometimes,
but you know, it brings up another point too. You want to talk about a hard way to run your business and when to hit go and always being spry and ready. That's the way that fisheries managed, which was pretty neat. I don't know if anyone knows this, but you have this Bristol Bay system and there's five rivers. So again, and again, there's probably a business thing to pull here about complicated systems and how to get them together. But, you know, you got this big bay, five rivers feed the bay, and these sockeye salmon are going up into these five rivers. And it's not just that we're out there catching them. We actually have to work with the state biologists to figure out when we can do it. And so there's literally a team of biologists at the head of each river counting the salmon that go up. So as that escapement number of salmon that enter the river to spawn goes up, we get more fishing time. And this is where I'm getting to the point where in the beginning of the trip, we didn't know when we were able to fish.
Yeah,
we would get on the boat and we'd have to listen to public radio, NPR, or we'd have to listen to whatever their AM station was out there. And they would tell us there's this many river up in the fish. You guys who are fishing in this particular district, you guys can fish from this window to that. So that was the other weird part. Like in the beginning, we had time to manage and we knew we had all this work to do, but you're just sitting there waiting to go. So like the point is too, it's like, again, this is another thing about sports that I think was helpful. Like you would anticipate the big tournament, but you always knew when it was coming. You knew when it was going. One of the harder parts about the trip was sometimes you didn't know when the work day was starting. You didn't know when it was over. And especially at the end, because at the end, once all the escapement numbers are hit in all the rivers, you're just open fishing. So the other part about it was in the beginning, we had all this anticipation about when we could fish and how we're going to get it. Then at the end, you end up going into these grinder 18, 24 hour work days where you don't know when you're stopping.
Wow.
So it's a wild system in that regard. And that's a tough thing to manage. I mean, I'm sure someone like you or me, everything's so schedule dependent. You know, one of the things at the beginning of every school year is everyone's talking about the bell schedule. Are these kids going to get 3 minutes to pass or 4 minutes to pass? And we're so worked up on these little minutes, but the weird part about being on that boat was the opposite. You're just these giant chunks of time that aren't scheduled at all, but then you're waiting to do something that is on a tight schedule.
Opposite. It seems like complete opposite of what we deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, and it's weird in a different way, right? So, listen, man, it challenged everything from how I look at time and do things in it to, I don't know, that was another weird component of it.
Well, I think that even the getting out of your normal routine is something that is, you know, it's worth doing just in general, right? Like, and so many of us, we do the same thing, and it can be comfortable because your body adjusts to that, you know, and you know when you're gonna eat, you know when you're gonna go to the bathroom, you know when you got work, you know when you have, you know, kid stuff, and I think that's it's just honestly, man. I mean, it's funny, like listening, like, or having this conversation, it's just so apparent how if you're not actually paying attention, that you just get sucked into whatever is happening around you, you know, the norm. And in fact, I was listening to this podcast and this guy made this reference. It was interesting. He was basically talking about a lot of different things.
Yep.
How this could be applied, but he has this concept of, he talks about, like, imagine you're standing on a beach and this fish just comes like crawling up on the beach. It stands up and it looks back over at the water and you're like, "What's up, fish?" And the fish is like, "Hey, what's up?" And you're like, "What are you doing here?" He goes, "Man, I just got out of the water and, it's crazy in there. Everybody's doing this, and everybody's swimming the same direction, you know, over here." And he's like, "I just had to get out of that." And it's like, when you're in it, you don't realize it. You're just one of those fish swimming along. But all of a sudden, if you come out and all of a sudden you're standing there and you look back, you're like, "Whoa, wait a second. Yep. I don't know if that is what we should be doing, or I'm not sure if that is what I want my life to look like, or the way I should view things." And yep. I think you have to do things in your life that take you out of that swimming with everybody, swimming with all, you know, all this, everybody in the same direction. And we're all creatures of habit, but also we're tribal in a lot of ways. And we're doing what people around us are doing because we don't want to, you know, stick out so much. But as soon as you take yourself out of that and you can realize like, well, is that actually what I want to do? Is that what I want my life to look like? Is that the intention that I have, that, or am I being intentional with how I'm living my life? Because I mean, dude, you said it's like, it's a dangerous place for you to work, and you get a near death experience, and all of a sudden you probably treat the time that you have a bit different, right? And the decisions that you make. So I think for a lot of people, they're just that fish swimming around in the water, and they never ever crawl out and look back and like, oh shit, is that actually what I want to do? Or is that just what I'm doing because that's what I was born into, or what is around me?
Yeah, no. I'm with you. I mean, taking this time does make you reflect on what you need to do. And I think that actually has been the hardest part about coming back, is finding what to trim to mirror some of that.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Cause it is enjoyable, I think, to have a singular focus on stuff. And I think there's concepts why we all think we multitask, but that's not what we're doing. We just switch from one thing to another. And every time you switch, you kind of take a step back. Right. So, when you do have that singular purpose and you can work towards that, it's nice to just be focused on that. And that's been the hardest part about coming back. I mean, and figuring out what to trim so I can enjoy regular days as much as those hard days. Right.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's it. Right. So like, if you could sum it up in a lesson that you say like, man, this is the most important thing I took away from this. And if you don't want to go get on a boat for 6 weeks and pull salmon off the lines, like stomp your foot, this is the lesson I learned. Like, what would you say it was?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I do these woodsy things because I like to simplify stuff and just do hard stuff. So the lesson there is to just how to prioritize, I guess. And I'm still having a hard time with it now. And I don't know why that is. Right. So here's the question. How come we could sort out a prioritization process to take a 6 week trip to just live on this boat, but then when we come back into this normal reality, you can't do that. And then you find yourself instantly right away doing 13 things in a day. Right. Yeah. So I don't know why that still is. How do you combat modern society has been still the question, and how do you find balance with it? And I don't know if I'm finding that answer. I don't know if taking the 6 week Misogi is the right answer, but you got to have something. For me, it's finding balance with it. And I don't know if there's a lesson in it, but you have to keep pushing that balance. I don't know what it is. You should do hard things and challenge yourself. But the biggest lesson is, at least for me, I don't like speaking for other people, but you got to challenge you got to swim against the modern current somehow. I don't know how, whether that's detoxing from your phone or taking a hike or getting on a boat or being bored. But I find value in that. And for me, the hardest lesson moving forward is how to keep integrating it without alienating my family and friends, because I can't keep doing it.
You can't keep doing that. But I mean, I think what you're saying, and this is, I think, a really good point for people, is like, you feel that you need to do something different. You feel like something is it's incongruent with the way, you know, your body and your mind feel like they need to be used. And you know, you come back and you're instantly, your schedule is like jam packed. There's no downtime. Your kids are the same way. But yet if you don't do that, then you're, you know, perceived as like you're going against the grain. Right. And they're not necessarily a good thing in a community either. Right. So it's a catch 22. How do you have elements of the individualization that, you know, you feel like you really need, and not do some of the things that you really, realize that maybe are not great for you. You know, it's like, you can't just throw your phone in the river, and never talk to anybody. You still got to be able to communicate, you know, but you also can't let it run your life and just get stuck And I've been here like just doing work all the time on my phone. And it's just like this thing that it's just this external computer. And it's like, it's a blessing and a curse for this stupid thing that needs to be managed correctly. Otherwise it becomes a problem. Right. So I think it's a challenging problem. And maybe it's something that we can leave everybody with that is like, think about it for yourself, right? Like what things are you doing right now that you know you shouldn't be, that you should cut out, that that are not healthy for you, you know, that are not adding to your life. If anything, they're taken away from it. But because you're nervous or you're scared that if you do that, you know, you're going to alienate people that are, you know, dependent on you or are important to you. Like making that decision is, I think, is tough and something that everybody individually pretty much has to they think about and decide on what to do.
Yeah, it's hard. I don't know how else to say that. It's funny how hard this modern existence can be in that regard to do what really you want to do, but finding balance with doing that because you can't just do it all the time. You can't just be this selfish prick that I'm doing this because that's what I'm doing. Although I'm sure you know some people who, I mean, those guys seem, I mean, do you think, I don't know. Guys like that maybe are happy because they're doing what they want. I don't know. But that's been the toughest part to kind of figure that out and how to manage that. But
it's tough, man. It comes down to like, I think everybody's definition of what gives them happiness is different. You know, I can tell you for me, I'm happiest whenever I'm like working together with other people to complete a goal of some sort. Right. And especially if I feel like that goal adds value to other people's lives in a significant way, that could be, you know, nonprofit work, like what Ashley used to do whenever she was, you know, before she started, you know, running Athletes Potential. It could be working with clients that we work with that are helping build these practices that really make a meaningful difference in other people's lives. I mean, dude, it could literally be help running something with the school where our kids go. It could be coaching and with another coach and helping like develop people. I think for me, I get a lot of personal satisfaction out of that. And it doesn't feel selfish at all. If anything, it's the most unselfish things that I do. I get the most personal satisfaction out of, right? So like I do seek those things out, but there's a fine line that you can cross over pretty easily if you just give, and you never, ever have any time to just, you know, be yourself and be alone or have downtime. And then next thing you know, you're overwhelmed and stressed out. And I've been on both sides of that. And it's just really understanding where your red line is and what is comfortable for you to be able to sustain. And it's hard to say no to stuff too. It's so hard to say no to people and to opportunities and all kinds of stuff. So like, I think it's just such an individual thing where everybody has to understand their own set point, what gives them meaning and happiness. And it's not always going to be the same because some other people might be like, I hate working together with people, you know, like that's fine. That's them.
And I guess the only way to get there is to test it, try stuff, do right. things, right. You know, put something on the calendar. I don't know, but we all have the other thing we really screwed up the book because you're not supposed to talk about Masogi. Right. But we spent the whole time doing it, but you know, not to bring it up again, but like, I guess, I don't know. Everyone probably has a Masogi cup and you need to be filling it every now and then, you know, and I don't know what that is for you or how you're doing it. But, I mean, I guess, and as you're kind of working through it and working through those little tests that you give yourself, you'll figure out what you can do. So you got to keep pushing it and trying varied ways to do it, you know? So, you know, if you can get on a Bristol Bay bow picker, go for it. That'll test it in all degrees, you know? And if anyone's interested in looking at it, seriously, it is as simple as Bristol Bay fishing jobs on a Facebook page. You can look at it, but there are other things you can do. You can work tenders, you can work in the canneries, which is a wild spot. There were things like that we did, but there are opportunities, but, you can also just go on a really long hike without your phone, right? You know, hike a mile, hike a 5K and start sorting it out that way. And I think you'll find reward in it.
Yeah, that's a great point, guys. I think that's probably a great spot to leave it. Joe, this was, it's cool to hear about your experience, man. It's like always fun to catch up as always. Those of you that, you know, you're newer to listening to this podcast, you know, maybe you don't know Joe quite as well. Go listen to, you know, I don't know if Doc and Jock episodes are still up or not, but I think there are a certain amount that you can go back and listen to if you want to hear, you know, our thoughts on strength and conditioning and health and wellness and all that. It's a bit different of a conversation that we normally would, would have, but it's cool to see how I, what I find interesting. And this is something that I just like really enjoy seeing with you, Joe, is just like how much just like you evolve as a person. You're always questioning things. You're always trying to grow and develop and experience different things. And I think that's a really admirable thing that not a lot of people do. And it's fun to catch up because I feel like every time when I talk to you, it's like I'm talking to another version, right? It's like Apple's updating version 10.0 or whatever, right? They just plugged into you.
Well, you got to talk to Eliza to see if I've really been updating. I don't know if it's a regression.
Yeah, you're right.
I think it might be a regression, but listen, I don't know. I think the best quality I have is I'm super curious and I'm not willing. I want to always scratch that itch. I don't know if there's an itch, I'm going to keep scratching it, you know, until there's something else to scratch at, you know what I mean? So, and I've been really fortunate to have some cool experiences that I can chase down and have people help me do it. It has not been, it's not been done alone for sure. Right. So Eliza has something to do with it. My parents and family had something to do with it coming up. So, I don't know. And the people around me like you who are interesting enough and curious enough to ask questions and keep talking about it. It's nice to be able to share it. So thank you for that. That's an that I'll take. Thank you.
For sure. All right. Well, guys, hey, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Joe, thanks for your time this morning, man. I really appreciate it. I know you're back to the grind of doing all different things that you do. And hopefully you guys like this one. If you do, take a screenshot of it, you know, put it on Instagram, tag us in it, and we'll go ahead and, you know, we'll make sure we reshare that. Where can people reach out to you if they're interested too, by the way, Joe? You know, if you're, are you using technology these days? Are you all done?
I got off. I completely ditched the social media. They can
text. I'm so jealous.
If they have questions about fishing or strength or whatever, actually Joe@athletespotential.com. That's probably the best email because I'm still doing remote coaching with the folks over there and helping out in that regard. So yeah, if they're interested in it, yeah,
that's right. I'll throw a little plug in for it. If you want to get a remote coach, you just got an hour and a half of what you're dealing with this guy, and the programs he has are awesome. But more than anything, it's just a great coach that'll hold you accountable. So yeah, hit him up if you want to get in better shape for your Masogi.
Yeah, so you know the email. Put that one on there if they want to work it out. Yeah, we'll get them going. It'd be great. Cool.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, as always, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Hey, Peach Entrepreneurs, we have big, exciting news, a new program that we just came out with that is our PT Biz part-time to full-time five-day challenge. Over the course of 5 days, we get you crystal clear on exactly how much money you need to replace by getting you ultra clear on how much you're actually spending. We get you crystal clear on the number of people you're going to see and the average visit rate you're going to need to have in order to replace your income to be able to go full time. We go through 3 different strategies you can take to go from part time to full time. You can pick the one that's the best for you based on your current situation. Then we share with you the sales and marketing systems that we use within our mastermind that you need to have as well if you want to go full time in your own practice. And then finally, we help you create a 1-page business plan. That's right, not these 15-day business plans. You want to take the Small Business Association, a 1-day business plan. It's going to help you get very clear on exactly what you need to do and when you're going to do it to take action. If you're interested in signing up for this challenge, it's totally free. Head to physicaltherapybiz.com/challenge. Get signed up there. Please enjoy. We put a lot of energy into this. It's totally free. It's something I think is going to help you tremendously as long as you're willing to do the work. If you're doing the work, you're getting information put down and getting yourself ready to take action in a very organized way, you will have success, which is what we want. So head to physicaltherapybiz.com/challenge and get signed up today.